When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Get in zone, AutoZone. Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I gotta change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99. Get in
zone. What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free. Get in
zone. And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone. Get in zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to Beyond the Scenes, the Daily Show podcast that goes a little deeper into segments and topics that originally aired on the show. Like, look, this is how you got to think about this podcast. If the Daily Show is a salad, then we're the toppings that make you want to eat that salad. The croutons, the grilled chicken, the Caesar salad dressing, or French or balsamic vinaigrette, or whatever the hell you prefer. We all know that honey mustard's the champ. We got it for you. We're diving into the world of esports today based on a segment from Daily Show correspondent Michael Costa. This segment took a deeper dive into the growing professional gaming industry. Roll my clip.
Competitive video gaming, known as esports, is booming.
There's even a training center with 5 training rooms and 6 locker rooms.
The Olympics are considering adding esports.
I went to California to a so-called training center in someone's garage to talk with these athletes about why video games isn't a sport.
What the hell is this?
This was the Alienware training facility for esports Team Liquid, complete with scrimmage stations, a war room, PR department, a team coach, and even an in-house chef. The team star, whose name is Taco, was acquired from Brazil's top team.
This is a real sport.
You call yourself an athlete?
Yes, of course. We compete, we go to tournaments, we travel a lot, we got some money.
What is an esport athlete, Mr. Taco, do every day?
Just practice.
Yeah. I'm a former professional tennis player. That's what I would call like a real sport. There is an opponent, and you would relish the opportunity to defeat them with your racket. What do you actually have to show for what you're doing?
Yeah, but come on. I have a really strong finger.
A finger?
Yes. This finger, I will kill at least 1 million people.
That finger's killed 1 million people?
At least.
To help break this down a little bit more for us, I'm joined by my fellow Daily Show correspondent and
Michigander was right. Trust your instincts. You had it.
Okay. Yeah, Michigander. And I'm going to learn from you what you learned about making this segment. Costa, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. And it feels odd to even be called in on this piece because I was such a skeptic going in. And now,
on like how professional? So you got
an e-sport? I mean, I never, you know, I grew up with sports. Not what's this e? Why is there a vowel in front of it now? So, but I was really impressed and turned the corner, so to speak. But obviously, your other guests can really talk about e-sports.
Yeah, and that other guest is a Call of Duty player for the LA Thieves, Sam Octane LaRue. Sam, how you doing?
What's going on, guys? I'm glad that we converged, Michael. I like that. That's good. I know you were a skeptic beforehand, but see, that's just, it's good. We're one at a time. I like that.
Yeah, I was a reluctant convert.
You didn't even want to in the first place. Okay.
Yeah, I was reluctant and you won me over. So that's a testament to how fun this can be.
I like that. Are you a video game guy at all or not? None at all? Nothing?
Okay. Ever since the controller had more than the A and B button.
Lord, are you serious? Not even a Sega Genesis?
I mean, Roy, I remember walking into you and Ronnie's office and you guys would be playing whatever. And I was just like, this looks cool, but I am so intimidated.
Oh, yeah. Ronnie and I on a slow week where they didn't need us. Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
I just had everything set up.
I like to see where we're starting here.
Want to jump ahead, but when I said about the piece, and I guess this is how I got converted,
I like watching anybody try to compete and perform under pressure. Mm-hmm. And once you realize that esports, that's all, that's what it is, that's fun. That's fun for me.
That's how I am about most things. If I know someone's going to be disappointed and crying at the end of the confrontation, that's usually my cup of tea. I can even watch Chopped Kids. Sam, let's start with that E in front of esports. You know, describe that world to us and tell us how long you've been a professional gamer.
Oh, man, we're summarizing esports. Okay, competitive video gaming is something that is, well, used to be extremely taboo. I'm happy, you know, Michael is a perfect example here that it's a little bit more mainstream than it used to be for sure. But like I said, it was taboo years ago. And the older generation of just most people in general, whenever you say that you play video games for a living, or, you know, whenever I get into an Uber and they're asked where I'm going, what I'm doing, and I tell them, the usual reaction is, oh, my kid plays video games, or, oh, how do you do that? And it's a very misunderstood topic, I could say. So I'm happy to see the progression that it's made over the last couple of years, because video games has at least used to have a pretty rough stigma around it. You know, people being lazy, it wasn't a productive thing to do with your time.
It makes you blind. It ruins your television.
Exactly. You couldn't make a living off of it. It was just a huge time sink. And I'm happy that the outlook on esports and video games in general, like I said, has changed over the last couple of years. But it's just competing at the highest level in whatever chosen video game you would like. Mine happens to be Call of Duty, but there's countless out there.
The way I've tried to explain it to people is that it's really not that different than going to a video game arcade back in the day, and you and five or six different guys would all try to get the high score on whatever the hell, Pac-Man, Galaga, whatever. You're just doing that online. The only scope of knowledge that I had of esports growing up was Madden. Like, I went to college at a place where people would play Madden for money in the dorm, in the TV room or whatever. And then eventually, at some point, ESPN had like a Madden League that used to come on at like 4 p.m. on ESPN 5 or some shit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense, because I've seen people do that here. But then once it got into like the bigger world of like all of these role-playing games and the first-person shooters, I'm like, well, where is the money coming from with that? Mm-hmm. Like, how does the money flow from that? Because this is being broadcast on Twitch and the internet, and I'm assuming it's no different than a broadcast network where you advertise to all of the eyeballs, right?
Exactly. It's very similar to traditional esports in at least my neck of the woods. I play in a franchise league, so similar to an NFL or an MLB. It's a city-based franchise league. I obviously play for the Los Angeles team. So there are ways to compare it to traditional esports to help people kind of figure out how to navigate the waters. But it's definitely a little tricky because, like you said, people don't know where the money's coming from. And you hear these absurd figures like, and there's a game called Dota, and they're like basically their Super Bowl. It was a $40 million tournament. So people are very reluctant and very confused when they hear the numbers being thrown around. Like I said, it's because it was so taboo years ago. The transition of like trying to understand the landscape is a little bit challenging for people at times, for sure. It's $40 million is a little different than Madden in your dorm, for sure.
I don't know. They was fighting in them dorms. They was playing.
Actually, competition's probably about the same.
Yeah. How do you get into this? Because this is one of them careers that now, like, do you feel like Costa, like at this point, like, why did the teacher tell me about this shit when I was in the third grade? I'd have stuck with that Sega Genesis. How do you get into this world? Like, how do you even make a team? Like, are you so good at Call of Duty as an individual that you get a call? Is it like the Matrix? Does someone knock at your door and say, follow the white rabbit? Like, how do you get pulled deeper and deeper into this world and then see it as a viable career path?
So I think I'm very confident I could say that like 95% of people start out as a casual video game player because they're doing it, whether it be for fun or it's just a game that they enjoy in general. I think there are very, very few cases where people actually just start playing and want to play competitively immediately. In my case, I just loved playing Call of Duty and loved playing video games my entire life. I've been playing since I could hold a controller, essentially. And I kind of tripped and fell into a career, to be honest with you. I was playing recreationally, like I said, and I had met some friends online that introduced me to the world of competitive Call of Duty. I didn't even know it existed when I was playing. I was kind of just in my own little bubble, wasting time, essentially, in high school. And my friend At the time, like I said, that I met online, he wanted to travel to this event, and it was so strange to me. And, you know, I was like 16, and I didn't even know if I was good. But, you know, when I'm 16 years old, traveling across the country to play at a video game event just sounds like a great idea. So naturally, I did it. I begged my parents, and I don't know why they let me do it, but they did. So shout out to them. And I kind of just tripped and fell in love with it. It was completely accidental. And I think that's honestly the best case scenario, because it's, you know, my livelihood today.
Roy, in the piece, I interviewed Rick Fox, former Lakers champion.
Echo Fox.
The hell is he doing there?
Well, exactly. So this is, I'm sure.
I mean, no disrespect to Rick Fox. I don't want him to beat my ass.
Well, and I remember when we were pre-producing the piece, I think one of my questions was, excuse me, Sam, I'm just going to speak frankly. Mm-hmm. I said, can we get a real athlete that maybe has got into esports? Because I don't want to sit with an e-fleet. I want to sit with someone that, like,
don't ever say that again.
Whatever the term is.
Oh, shit.
But, man, there was something really powerful about a guy wearing his Lakers world championship ring.
It's easier to connect with. It's
easier for me to connect with, for sure.
Exactly.
What are you doing with these nerds, man? You're a real athlete.
And so are they.
What the shit are you talking about? Me and you, we played real sports, you know? You could see our balls in our pants when we played.
In our era, I think there was no shame around pursuing a career in professional sports, because you could get a scholarship to college, which, by the way, you can get as an esport player now. There's a number of colleges that are building esports arenas on their campuses.
This is all great, but let's get down to brass tacks here. How much do these e-fleets make?
Probably the best top laner in the world in one of our games, he makes probably $800,000.
What? And he talked about how, I think he has a son, or maybe he was talking about one of his players, I don't know, but their parents were like, stop playing video games, you know, go outside and play. And then one of his athletes had just signed like a $3 million contract. And it is very funny, because my mom, I mean, we played Super Mario. We played, you know, my mom, get outside. I'll give you an hour of video game time if you go outside all day.
Yes.
You know, and it's really like, my mom, you really blew my financial opportunities. And I blame my mom to this day.
Your mom's the reason you're not a professional esports player, huh?
Right.
Okay. So, Costa, it staying in that lane, what were some of the other, like, similarities and differences between like traditional sports and esports? Are they getting timeouts? Are they getting water breaks between every round? Like, do you have a corner man? Get him, Rock!
We're dropping the gloves.
We went to Team Liquid's training facility in Santa Monica. And when I walked in, okay, quickly about me, I played minor league professional tennis, dedicated much of my life to tennis, never got to the highest level in tennis that I wanted to. But I walked into Team Liquid's training facility and I said, this is a tennis academy. I mean, there was a chef who cooked us lunch. There was a training facility. There was a breakdown room where you'd break down video.
Watch footage.
They had mental coaches, maybe the wrong word, on staff. They had lots and lots of people whose job it was to facilitate and make sure the athletes were ready to compete. And as soon as I walked in the door, I just had this feeling of like, oh, shit, I got to go put my tennis shoes on and go practice. It just felt like that. So there was a lot of similarities.
So, Sam, in that world, I would assume that diet and sleep help your mental acuity, which makes you quicker and more analytical. Mm-hmm. What is the typical training day? I'm not going to say you don't need to be physically fit. I feel like you do.
It definitely helps. I've been on both sides of the spectrum of physically fit and not physically fit while competing. It definitely helps.
How does that tax your body?
So it's much more mental. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that we go through the physical strain.
Right.
That,
and I'm not going to. I'm not going to agree with that
players.
Either.
Naturally.
I would love to do a side by side cholesterol or blood pressure test of an athlete versus a.
We could run a 40 right now. We'll see how it goes.
No, but still sitting in a chair, like, because I've noticed them gaming chairs. Costa, you ever sit in one of them gaming chairs?
Dude, they're outrageous.
They are kind of ugly, but so comfortable.
They're not comfortable.
Oh, my God.
They're not comfortable. I actually prefer the office chair. So, like I said, it's essentially all mental. Obviously, being in better physical shape is just better for your life in general. It impacts all aspects of your life, not just you know, video games. But to Michael's point, how he mentioned the infrastructure behind Team Liquid's facilities and all that, that's pretty much the standard throughout the majority of tier one esports. That's when you talk about League of Legends or Dota or Counter-Strike, Call of Duty, all of these things, that is the standard. We have a chef as well. We have mental performance coaches. We have all of these things. And I think that that's another thing that people really can gravitate towards and understand. Because when, you know, you watch these videos of like behind the scenes of, I don't know, the Chargers facilities, you'll see like their locker room. You'll see where they watch their game film or VOD for us. You'll see where the chef prepares their meals. It's a one-to-one comparison. So I think that that's another thing that can help bring people towards esports in an easier light. And to your point, Roy, it's all mental. It's 95-5, I would say, in terms of mental. And that's arguably worse, because you can become your own worst enemy pretty quickly, because it's very performance based, and obviously, you know, traditional sports are as well. But you can get hurt and you can go out for the season, and that's not really, I mean, it's not your fault, that's just an unfortunate circumstance. Whereas in esports, it's entirely on your performance, and there's really, bar like an extreme circumstance, there's no excuse. You either played well or you played poorly, and there's
it's not like the defense sucked but I did my job.
It's not like I threw for 400 yards and three touchdowns but my defense let up, you know, 40 points. It's like I went out and I either helped my team win or I helped my team lose. So there are very strong
binary
mental health for sure.
Are you guys drug tested? This is not a joke. I mean, if it's that mentally straining,
yeah,
there's all types of legal focus. and illegal focus drugs. And I know there's stories in the NFL of there being bags of greenies that guys pop in there, you know, before halftime that keeps them focused, keeps them energized, amphetamines.
So we are drug
tested. For real. Is that, yeah, tell me, please talk to
me. Yeah, we are drug tested.
Okay.
That was something that came with the CDL when we started franchising a couple of years ago. Before that, it was kind of the wild, wild west and you could do what you want. And it was like a tough, it was just, there wasn't enough money for it because drug testing, I didn't even know this. It's extremely expensive to do. So once the CDL hit and there was a large influx of money, you know, millions and millions of dollars, the league's drug policy and just the franchising in general really cracked down. There's, it touts for everything under the sun.
And when you say CDL, we're talking about the Call of Duty League. Yep. Okay. Now, what are you all drug tested for? What are the prohibited substances?
Everything under
the sun. So, no weed. I mean, the big one's cocaine, heroin. I'm sure crack is frowned upon.
None of that.
You could have a legal prescription for Adderall.
Yeah, so there's things called TUEs. I think it's therapeutic use exemption is the acronym. And there are people in the league. I have friends of mine that vouch for this as well. When you have ADHD, it is very hard to actually just function as a person without Adderall or whatever you're on, because you need to come back to zero. It's not, or come back to 100, whatever it may be. It's not like you're taking it to be better. It's taking it to be like a neutral. So there are cases like that, which I have very close friends that are like that as well. So there are times you have to go to a doctor. You have to go through the process to be like, look, are you trying to do this because you need it, or are you trying to do this to get a competitive edge? So the CDL does a phenomenal job on making sure that that line is correct and there's no one pushing the boundary.
Now, to that point, after the break, I want to talk exactly about that a little deeper, because I want to talk about the mental health implications of what you've already kind of alluded to, putting pressure on yourself and knowing it's your fault that you sucked, David. And
that's right.
How do you unpack that? And if you need to address that pharmaceutically, what does the league do to help? And I just want to talk about the mental health implications of what your job, because it seems stressful. And any job that's stressful, there is definitely a pill that could help you with it. And I want to talk about that a little bit more after the break. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S., That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Sam, you know, we left talking about your practice schedule and everything that goes into preparing. First off, like in hours, how long are you doing this? Like if football, if football is like 9 to 6 with 2-a-days and a break in the afternoon for massage.
Oh, so you want a full schedule breakdown?
Well, no, not a full schedule breakdown, but just from sunup to sundown, how long are you holding a video game controller?
Between 10 to 13 hours, 14 hours.
Shit, you crazy.
A day?
Yeah.
How many days a week? Do you get Friday, Saturday off?
Like 6.
6 days at 13?
Is that?
And that's a me thing. That's not the standard. There's plus and minus, obviously. But if you want to win, you got to put the hours in. Because if you're not going to do it, then someone else will. So I've been around the block. I've been playing for, 8 years at this point, 9 years. So I understand what it takes to win, and I've won a lot. So it's a lot of trial and error throughout my career to find the spot where I know that I'm putting in the work required to win. And right now, it's about that time.
Are you playing Call of Duty, or are you working on a specific exercise to improve a specific part of your game?
So you guys asked me if it's controller held the entire time, and it's not. It's probably like 8 hours of playing, and then the rest is either VOD review on the day, talking with coaches or my team to figure out, plans or strategies for the next day of scrims, or talking in general about practice and improvement, whether that be game planning for matches that are upcoming, or if we're traveling, talking about our schedule and bracket and all that kind of stuff. For the schedule throughout the day, we practice from 11 a.m. to give or take 6 p.m. Those are 2 scrim blocks per day with a break in the middle.
What's a scrim block? Scrimmage?
Scrimmages, yeah. So okay, okay. Against other teams. So yeah, 2 of those a day, with a break in the middle, obviously, for lunch, and we'll talk about the game plan if we're doing things properly, if we're addressing the issues that we want to talk about for that day. And then afterwards, when you get home, I'll usually stream on Twitch, and then that's kind of the extra time. I'll stream for 4 to 5 hours per night, and I'm also playing COD during that time as well. So it's the overtime, essentially, that kind of pushes those hours, really.
Do you ever have fun? Do you ever just go, today I want, like...
No, it's really fun. It's a cliche, but if you like your job, you're not going to work a day in your life.
Okay, because you was in the work voice just now. That was a work octave. Yeah. Well, you got to train, and then you study the other team strategies, and you figure it out.
Yeah, it's video games, man. It at the end of the day, it is my job, and it is how I make a living, but it is video games at the same time. So I have a ton of fun doing it. It's competing, and obviously competition's great. If you're losing all the time, competition's probably not that great. But yeah, it's video games, man. It cannot be fun.
This is where I appreciate traditional sports, in that you cannot play that many hours. Even in tennis, even at our most high training of 2-a-days in college, where it was 2.5 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. I mean, the second half of that second workout is basically,
you just feel horrible.
Well, it's counterproductive. You're out of energy. So chalk one up for the traditional sport that I didn't have to play tennis 12 hours a day and then go home and twitch my serve. So I mean? Man,
that's where the boundary of the physical and the mental comes in, for sure. Because it's mental burnout, whereas in physical or traditional sports, obviously physical burnout.
Okay, so then let's talk about the mental burnout of that. Have you ever been impacted by that? Like, have you ever felt that level of just, I'm spent?
Yes. Definitely have. So when I was young, I went pro at 18 years old, but I was playing obviously long before then. I was just excited to be playing the game. Mental health wasn't something that I was really focused on because that never had impacted me, essentially. And up until, I would say like 2 years ago, was the first time where I had really noticed the decline. And I didn't really take the proper steps beforehand, and I didn't have like the warning signs of myself to have the self-awareness to stop that from happening. So I was on a different team a couple of years ago, going through a pretty rough stint in terms of like placings and just team performance overall. And it got pretty dark. I was contemplating like retirement. I didn't know where my career was going to take me. I didn't know if I was even capable of playing anymore. So that's the self-doubt had definitely crept in. And like I said, since I didn't really have any prior experience with dealing with mental health issues, it kind of all hit me like a truck. And it was definitely something that I had to navigate being an adult and trying to figure out how to just get out of that headspace. That's where, Michael, when you mentioned the Team Liquid thing, like the mental performance coaches come in. We had one that was phenomenal with 100 Thieves or LA Thieves. So
the team understands that, and they've made space for that within their facilities for you all to have that, the same as a chef, the same as a masseuse.
So we have...
and that's new. Like, that's, very new. My college... You know, that's new. And one thing, and Sam, please talk more about this. It's always hard as an athlete to know, am I mentally ill or do I just keep losing and losing sucks? You know what I mean? It hurts to lose. You take it personally. You work so hard and you're losing. It's like a slump is different than like I'm depressed.
Yeah.
But there are some crossover. So how did you
definitely is.
I mean, it's nuts.
It's I think the only way to really differentiate between the two is how much work that you're putting in. I mean, if you are doing the bare minimum, you're slotting by and you're losing, then you can really self-reflect and be like, look, I'm not doing what I could be doing right now. Someone should have my job. That isn't me. Whereas on the opposite end of the spectrum, if you're putting in 10 to 12 hours a day, if you're watching VOD, if you're doing everything you possibly can to get better and you're still losing, you need to have the mental acuity to be like, look, I'm doing everything I can. I'm putting 110% into what I'm doing right now. So that's a thing that you can take away. Maybe your team isn't great. Maybe then you can look outside and not pass blame, but you can understand that you are doing whatever you possibly can in that situation. And that was something I had to learn, because when I was doing poorly, I really didn't understand that. So I wasn't doing everything that I could have been doing at the time. And once I started, and I started to feel a lot better, because it's like, look, even if the results aren't there, I know that I'm putting my best foot forward. So there's definitely crossover, like you mentioned. It's just having to navigate that crossover is very, very hard to do.
Yep.
Can you go on injured reserve for my mind ain't right? Like, how does it, when you're talking about this is a team-based sport and you can be replaced by somebody, I don't know how your JV squad or your minor league or how you get called up from the G League goes in that world, but if somebody replaces you and they do better than you, you ain't getting your job back.
That is very true.
What is the pressure of choosing to endure mental health struggles instead of just literally taking a break and unplugging from everything?
So up until a couple of years ago, it was very taboo to do that. Mental health in general wasn't really looked upon until a couple of years ago as a serious topic. And Call of Duty held that same sentiment. There have been cases where people have said, look, I'm burnt. I can't do this right now. I'm not in the headspace to compete. I am just a burden to my team, essentially. That has happened over the last couple of seasons in multiple different cases. And to answer your question, there are substitutes on rosters that will step in for that player, whether it be like, hey, I just need a week. I need X amount of time. Doesn't matter. And again, to your point, if they start performing very well, it feels pretty rough. But 9 times out of 10, the player will either be traded the next season, if that is something that ends up happening, or the player will just come back outright and be like, look, I feel a lot better. I'm in a much better mental state than I was prior. But yeah, mental health.
So it's like quarterbacks in football, basically. If you lose your job to the backup, you still have worth.
Exactly.
In the league.
Like you're going to have name value. You're going to be like, look, this guy was playing extremely well prior to his break, and maybe his break made him feel 10 times better. So you still have name value when that case happens. That also has happened to your point where a substitute will step in and perform well. That's kind of how new players enter the league in general. But
this is pro sports. I mean, the stakes are high and there's real money. So it's not like a participation trophy for everyone. So it's
that's
like,
right.
You know, I mean, it sucks. It sucks. But if someone steps in and does better than you, you got to really think about if you're going to pop off. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
I see one of Sam's mental health strategies just ran into the room.
That's right.
Because everybody who competes or performs at a high level needs something that loves it unconditionally.
That's right. Cameo.
Are we dog cameo?
Oh, okay. The dog cameo.
Trying to get those likes. Look, I can bomb all day. I can bomb all day at a comedy club, but as soon as I come home, this little idiot licks me and tells me I'm funny. That's all I need.
Oh, hear the door open. Hear the door open. But yes, to your point, it definitely helps.
Have you ever fired a real gun?
No, I have not, which is strange because I am from somewhere that loves hunting in the dirty South. So, yeah, no, I have not.
Sam, across all leagues, now you play at an optimum level in your craft. At some of the lower level leagues, have you seen an increase in the level of support that esports leagues are providing to the players with regards to mental health? Like, I understand the care that you got.
So but, like, it would be like the G League in the NBA, for example?
Yeah, yeah, or double-A baseball and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's just with a rising tide lifts all ships kind of situation. Once the league franchised and we got that huge influx of money, like I mentioned beforehand, it kind of helped everyone. I know that there was a large structure put in place for, we call it challengers. That's like that's our thing. So when you're talking about the Challenger League, there is a lot more structure than there used to be. I mentioned the Wild Wild West a little ago. It was very much like that. But now there's a lot of different organizations. There are professional teams that have academy rosters or challengers rosters that are directly linked to the CDL teams. There are separate entities in their own that just...
Bro, that's British Premier League soccer shit where we draft you at 14 and you are part of our organization.
Exactly. That is exactly correct.
Wow.
I understand when I watch the NFL how they make money. How are they making money? Like, why would they invest? It's not broadcast yet. There's a little bit of broadcast, but like, where is the money coming in for esports? Is it the sale of the game?
So there's a couple different avenues. The main one obviously is advertising and selling sponsorships as you do in general. For the individual, such as myself, there are, you know, brand deals. I have an agent similar to how an NFL would do it. You know, I can't go on a commercial with State Farm and Patrick Mahomes, but I can do some one-offs, you know, something for like Herman Miller or just, you know, brands in general that would want to work with you. Mm-hmm. They're streaming on Twitch. There's a lot of revenue there. You can do YouTube. So it's just content as an individual on the individual level is probably the number one, as well as your salary, which I'll get into. On the league level, it's a lot of brands. It's a lot of selling partnerships. And on the organizational level, that's where you have the tie to basically insanely rich people that like to do esports or have an interest in it. So I used to play for the Seattle Surge. They're partnered with the Canucks. I currently play for the LA Thieves, which is a branch of 100 Thieves. They are one of like a deep AAA esports organization. They had a Series A investment when they first started their company, invested by Drake. You said like Rick Fox and Echo Fox. There are multiple different cases over esports where people just have an interest and happen to have a lot of money. And so, I mean, it's never a bad thing. You know, I'm salaried and it provides my living and there's a huge structure. You know, I have insurance. Okay. It's a lot of different things.
But with that celebrity involvement, that has not made it mainstream or uncool in any way?
Oh, I think it's the exact opposite. I think that, funnily enough, to
Drake's involved, not Screech.
There you go. no, so to talk about the celebrity thing just for a second, I think the pandemic really moved video games into the spotlight. I think beforehand it was pretty taboo and it was nerdy to just put it blatantly if you played video games. And I think the pandemic with everyone being inside kind of tied everyone together, like, look, I can't go out, I don't have anything to do, let's all hop on Warzone and hang out. So I think it brought celebrities into the limelight. You look at like Kyler Murray, he just has memes around him that he plays Call of Duty on his Microsoft Edge when he's on the field. You know, Drake, like I said, is a Series A investor of 100 Thieves. There's a bunch of different
examples. Post Malone is even like,
exactly, he loves Apex and was on Complex complexity. So I've met a lot of these guys. I've met celebrities strictly because I played video games, and these are things that I never would have been able to do otherwise. And it's kind of cool because it's an icebreaker. You can go up and you can talk shit to them. You can do it, it humanizes them, because when you see these people and you see Drake, he's like, dude, why would I ever put myself in the same room as this guy? I wouldn't even know what to say. But it gives you the opportunity to be able to speak freely and not be as nervous. And obviously, okay, that's just an extremely privileged standpoint, because I could talk to these people. But
because that's always my thing. I just want to make sure that I think it's cooler if they're legitimate fans and have some level of emotional investment in what's happening versus this just being, I've put some money on this and I'm here to check on my, like almost earnest in the way that like Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney bought that soccer team over in England, but they're legit there and running the team. Like they are invested in care versus just somebody. Yeah, this is my liquor
attaching
line.
Their name to it.
Yeah. What the fuck do you know about liquor? tequila. Buy my tequila. Did you go down there and check on your tequila plants, bitch? Did you? You probably did. After the break, Costa, I want to talk to you about your experience going to one of these tournaments, what it was like. We need to talk about the salary, Sam. I don't want to pocket watch you, but I want to know kind of.
Okay, we're pocket watching.
Yeah,
right.
Give us the median. We don't need your number, but give us the median. And I want to talk a little bit about women representation within your sport as well. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you, but consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Beyond the Scenes, we're rounding third and headed for home, talking esports. Now, Michael Costa, you went to one of these esport events. Now, I'll give you my scope of knowledge. We have The Wiz with Fred Savage.
Yep.
Where he went to play Super Mario 3.
That's right. Holy shit.
Before it came out, the whole movie was basically a commercial for Mario 3. It got my ass. And then I also have The Last Starfighter, where a dude was so good at a video game that an alien from space came down and said, can you help free our oppressed people with your video game skills? That's my spectrum of knowledge of being good at video games and being invited to do it at a pinnacle.
I don't even know the second reference.
That's a cult hit, bro.
Those are some references, let me tell you. Those are some tier one
deep
references.
Cuts. I'm 44 years old. I'm old. So when you step into the Barclays, Costa, like just the array of people there, like what's the demo for this? Is it 14 to 40? Is it just young people?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, my previous knowledge of this was that documentary, The King of Kong. I don't know if you ever saw that about the competitive King Kong. Donkey Kong. And I remember putting that maybe in the DVD player saying, what is this trash? Why did my brother make me watch this? And immediately am suckered into, because it's about competition. It's about watching people compete at their highest level. So I love that. So Barclays Center,
I definitely felt fish out of water. I definitely felt like I was the tallest person there. There was 20,000 people there. I immediately was envious and jealous of the fandom, of the passion, of the enthusiasm, of the energy. You know, tennis, you clap like this. I maybe had two people at my matches. I was watching Team Liquid compete in Counter-Strike, and all the fans, audience members, you know, whatever you call them, they're wearing these bracelets. And when one team would place the bomb on the other team, you know, and I'm going to butcher the sport, but when one bomb gets placed, a clock starts ticking down. And every time a second goes off, everyone in the stadium's bracelet pulses, 20,000 pulsing bracelets. So then as the bomb gets closer and closer to going off, these bracelets start glowing. To add to the terrifying notion that this bomb's going to explode soon.
Interactive.
So I'm like standing, it's so cool, Roy. I'm standing there like there's 20,000 bracelets going brighter red. And the other team's trying to like defend or find the bomb or whatever the shit.
To defuse it,
you know,
yeah.
Defuse. It was like, oh shit, esports. You guys tied in the fans in the game. That was a badass move. And that was when I was sold. Now, I don't play and I didn't buy the jersey, but I immediately got it and gave it some props because it was a fun environment.
Sam, are people betting on this shit? Because if this is like, wait,
absolutely.
I'm sorry, what?
You bet on DraftKings.
On DraftKings, I can just go on a gambling app and just go, yeah, give me $40 on Sam to score, to get 15 kills.
Throw out some parlays, you do whatever you want.
Wow.
That's a level of knowledge that I do not possess about this. Right. So if it's 20,000 people,
I'm
you're streaming.
You guys, it's the exact same thing. I'm sitting here preaching. It's the same thing.
So if it's being live streamed, there's revenue coming from that. And eventually that has to trickle back to the players at a high level.
We're pocket watching, Roy.
It's pocket watching time. At a high level, could I make six figures doing this for a living?
Yeah. Absolutely. So when you're a member of the CDL, whether that be substitute or on the starting roster, your minimum salary is $50,000. You cannot make under $50,000 if you are a contracted CDL professional player.
How long is the season?
The season is 9 months. So it's basically a school year. It's the exact same school year.
Every
season. You got your time off. So
and then you make your side hustles on Twitch and do other streams. You get your celebrity stuff. Okay. See.
The high end, you're making high six figures.
High sixes,
mid to high sixes on the extreme cases. Like the highest played player in the league makes high six figures. I'm in the middle. Not going to say where.
So just so people who aren't good with their figures, six figures is $100,000. So you're saying mid to high, you can make $500,000.
Can make $500,000 to about $500,000.
Damn,
is like the majority of the league. I'd probably say 80%.
That's awesome.
So when you look at the research, you know, with all of these different teams, at least the research on our side, there seems to be a lack of representation of women in esports. Have you seen that number slowly growing over the span of your career? Talk about where representation is for women when you started versus where you see it going today. Because I would imagine there isn't a need for a women's league. Like, we're not going to get into muscle mass and size difference. It's your thumb. Mm-hmm. Can you move your thumb as fast as I can?
So it's funny you ask, because I think it was either yesterday or the day before, there was the first woman to qualify for the Challengers Elite, which is basically like their tournament that is in the Challenger League. That was the first time in forever. And that was like 2 days ago, I think. So definitely there's more women representation every year. It's building. And I think that's just across esports as well. I don't even think that's specific to Call of Duty. You know, Valorant has women's leagues. They have full blown. I don't know what they call it in Valorant, but they have like academy rosters. They have a full blown league strictly for women. So I think that as the year goes on, or as the years go on, excuse me, I can't help but agree that as time goes on, there's just more and more women representation, which is incredible to see. Specific to Call of Duty, I think we're lagging behind just a tad because it's not really something that I think women really gravitate towards. I think Valorant is probably leading the space right now in terms of just esports as a whole, because I was watching that the other day, and no joke, and it was legitimately impressive because I am horrific at Valorant. I can't play on keyboard and mouse at all to save my life in any aspect. Thank God I have a controller to make my living on. But yeah, I think women are definitely trailblazing in the space right now for sure.
Is there, in terms of the fight for, because I want to be very careful about not rolling the esports community into the gaming community as a whole, right? I feel like they're two different things.
Very separate.
Professional gaming, where there might be some degree of gender discrimination, and you're saying that there are leagues and that there are efforts to make things more equitable for women. But absolutely, on the gaming side, we're just talking the regular Joe Blow gamer in the basement. Women are subjected to all types of harassment and trolling and bullying and doxing. How much can the esports community do to try to speak out against that? It's kind of like the racism in soccer. Soccer's not racist, but there's a lot of the fans that be talking crazy in them stands. So has the esports community been able to do anything, I guess, to speak out about that or try to stop and curtail that?
I think that transcends the esports community. I think that becomes just like a humanity thing and trying to be a good person in general. But to your point, absolutely. I think just trying to be as positive as you can about the space. And I think that gaming definitely has that stigma attached. Michael, since you're such a filthy casual, I'm sure that you could, you probably agree that, you know, there are people that when you talk about video games, they're just people that are assholes. And I think that's in all walks of life. Unfortunately, I think that you're absolutely right, Roy. You know, the sexism and stuff like that, it definitely is not great for the space, not even just esports, but video games and life in general. That's something that we need to be a lot more progressive on. You know, I do my best to spread as much positivity in my stream as I can, and I'm very welcoming to anyone, but you're definitely not wrong there. And I think that when you have women transcending in esports and becoming, you know, like I said, with the Valorant thing or her name is Kelsey in Call of Duty, when you have these women making headway in the space, I think that sets an example because, you know, these women could kick your ass in the video game that you're talking shit about. So I think that is something that, you know, hopefully down the line in a couple of years or hopefully sooner, progression is made. But I mean, that's just a humanity thing in general, just trying to be a good person. I don't think that's necessarily an esports thing.
There's something beautiful as we get more women playing competitive esports, in particular Call of Duty. There's something beautiful about men and women trying to kill each other in a video game.
It's very romantic. You know
what I mean,
romantic.
Like that is right now. It's mostly men trying to kill each other, but it adds such a beautiful complexity when it's both genders both working together and also working against each other.
And that was your takeaway from this whole segment, Costa?
He's a filthy casual. I like it.
No, but I mean, you talked about it a little bit at the top, Costa, but, you know, as a casual coming into this and having covered it, how did it change your view of just, you know, even just the idea that video games make people crazy?
Like
in theory, right? Like they go, oh, video games make people violent. But then you have...
Love that take. That's such a
yeah,
great...
Yeah, I know. It's such a hack take. I know.
You have an arena full of people watching violence and people doing violence. How do they... Why aren't they all fighting?
Well, you know, I just was reminded and humbled that what I think is one way is what I think. But it's so important to step out of your comfort zone because I 100% would be the dad that would say, get off the video games, go outside, get off the video games, go outside. But then you walk into the Barclays Center and 21,000 tickets were sold. And I just say, this is another healthy outlet. I know that, well, and you know, they're doing a violent game or whatever, but it was really fun to see the team. There was a team aspect. There was a coach. They were learning lessons. There was people that were disappointed. There was people that had achieved that day. It was preparing them for all facets of life. That's cool.
So just to interject really quick, that was your first and only experience with esports, correct? That's right. Counter-Strike tournament?
Yeah.
You probably picked the best thing that you could have possibly done to have your to do your for your first time.
Yeah, well, that's probably why we picked it too.
Counter-Strike fandom is kind of one on its own. I think it's a league above the rest. Not to make the joke, but League of Legends is also very good. Counter-Strike has such passion behind it. It transcends the game as well. It goes to nationality, the European Counter-Strike. You know, Team Liquid was Brazilian Counter-Strike. We could compare it to soccer. I mean, there's legitimate fandom when it comes to nationalities within Counter-Strike, and that's why it's so incredible. Like, when North America does well, people are losing their minds. You know, years and years ago, Cloud9 was doing incredible. They won a major with Shroud. So, Counter-Strike is, I think, the extreme example of fandom in esports, and League of Legends is also incredible as well.
Cool. Well, Sam, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Costa, thank you as well for contributing to this wonderful, wonderful conversation.
Hope we converted Costa while we were here, Roy. I hope we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's baby steps. Let's put him on a Super Nintendo. Let's go to six buttons. He's not ready for left L2, R2. He's not.
Not quite the keyboard and mouse yet.
That's all the time we have for today, but hopefully by now we've taken you beyond the scenes. See you next week. Listen to The Daily Show Beyond the Scenes on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.